This is your Week in Gaming, episode 39, recorded for the 19th of April, 2024, to bring you all the latest news from the world of gaming. On today's episode of the podcast, we talk about The Crew, World of Warcraft VR mod, Sony patents, and jail time for a save modifier. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 39 of your Week in Gaming. It has been a long week. There's been a lot that has come out, as well as a Fallout series by Amazon, which, you know, I've had people tell me about it, and it's really, really cool. I haven't watched it yet, but definitely on my to-do list. I'm joined once we again by Samantha.
Hello.
Not a guest, a co-host.
Or AI.
Everything has gone nowadays, and it's crazy. Sony is doing things with AI. Logitech are doing things with AI. Microsoft, like everybody, is just, it's AI everything, and it's a little creepy, but also I'm super excited for all of this kind of stuff.
I'm just saying, somebody never watched iRobot. I watched iRobot. I know what happens. Okay, I've seen the script.
iRobot, Terminator. Clearly, everybody has forgotten all of those things, and we're just pressing forward. One day we will learn our lesson, but there's a lot of news. There's some gaming news that we have. We've got a slightly changed section for this week. There's a lot of special mentions, as well as a little bit of a highlights from the Nintendo show. So I think let's just get straight into it. With gaming news now, and digital ownership fears have reared its head once again, with Ubisoft stripping people's licenses to their online-only game, The Crew. The game was pulled from sales back in December of 2023, with Ubisoft saying that their servers will be shut down in April. Despite much of the game still being able to be done in single player, this was an online-only game. The game is being listed in players' libraries as inactive games, and some people are not happy about this. Modders were working on a single-player version of the game, which apparently about 70% of the game could be done like this. But that is almost a wild dream now, thanks to what has taken place. Some people have called this abhorrent behavior and the most ruthless decision ever seen in gaming history. And I kind of tend to agree with them. There are massive pros to digital ownership. But when companies do things like this, it raises so many issues and concerns. Do we need to go back to the days of discs and just being happy with buying what is likely to be a multiple disc game?
I'm going to go ahead and say right now that I have a PS2 and I have games that I bought for my PS2. And all of those games still work on my PS2. That being said, I have a PS3 and I have digital games for my PS3 and all of those games still work, even though the stores have been closed. But the ones that I have on a disc, I know will never not be able to be played because I own it on a disc. This has been my argument for months. And I remember that, like, we reported on The Crew a little while ago, just talking about the fact that they were going to shut down the servers, and with it being an online-only game, it meant that a lot of people were going to lose access. So, I mean, we knew it was coming, but that doesn't make it any less terrible. Like, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, we're bulldozing your house next week, you're gonna have to find a new place to live. When it happens in a week's time, you're not any less upset because you were given notice. So, like, this, yeah. I hate this precedent. And as I say, right, like, we've spoken about this kind of thing at length previously, and I think it's something that we're gonna continue to complain about ad infinitum until game devs realize that this is a really, really terrible model and it needs to go.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that, you know, we're going to cover a little bit later on in the podcast, but this is definitely left a very sour taste in a lot of people's mouths, and I can understand why some people are super mega upset about this.
Since we are going to circle back to this a bit later, I'll jump on ahead to the next bit of news, and a World of Warcraft mod has made the classic and arguably best MMO into a VR experience, and you can download it for free. The project comes from Flatscreen2VR, a longtime modding community who have brought VR functionality to Resident Evil 4, Amnesia, Crysis, Portal 2, and many others. This latest addition to their long list of mods transforms Blizzard's iconic MMO into a fully fledged VR experience. Now, there is one caveat to this. The mod took 10 years to develop. Jesus. And as such, it only works with the 3.3.5a version of the game. The good news is that it included what most players say are the best expansions in the entire series, which were Burning Crusade and Wrath of the Lich King. Additionally, this mod comes with full 6 DOF tracking support, or 6 degrees of freedom, which enables tracking of both the position and orientation of the headset in a 3D space. So basically what that means is that your head movements can always be accurately translated to camera actions. This initial version requires VR controllers and cannot be played with MNK, but it might be a feature in the future if the mod proves popular enough. Sadly, the community has no plans to continue active development, though I think that's understandable given that it took 10 years to make this one. But who knows? Maybe we see an official version sometime in the future. I think raiding in VR would be sick, and I don't just mean motion sick.
I think that raiding in virtual reality is at least going to be a way for people to see the fire that they're standing in. DPS, I, as a healer, see you standing in the fire. Get out. No. I mean, this sounds super, super cool, right? It's patch 3.3.5a, which was the patch which I started playing World of Warcraft in, which is super dope. So this brings immediate nostalgia to me, you know, even though I'm a classic WoW player at the moment as well. And the 10 years, something like this from like a modding community just out of like passion is crazy. I mean, I could really get behind, you know, leveling in, you know, if you're playing Alliance for whatever crazy reason. I mean, you could go
the Alliance, please.
you could go and level in Elwynn Forest and things, but I mean, like places like Durotar, it's just so much better, you know, just the Barons and the Northern Barons chats and everything. That just brings back massive nostalgia. So this kind of mod, it sounds so cool. I actually feel like I need to get my hands on a VR headset so that I can at least just give this a try, because this sounds crazy. So kudos to Flat Screen 2 VR. This is a phenomenal achievement.
The really cool thing is that it's free. They took 10 years to develop this and just said, here you go, guys, have it free. It's cool. Just have it. That's phenomenal. Yep. I know that they probably have like a Patreon or something where you can go and support them and whatever, and that's great. But they could very easily have slapped a price tag on this, and they just said, "Nah, let's go play it, have fun," and that's dope.
Yeah, I mean, you know, something like this is super, super big. It's by people that are just very passionate about doing things like this. So if you do actually go and check this out, as we mentioned, it is from Flat Screen to VR. So, and if you do, you download it and you really do like it, you know, if you do have a few bucks to spare and there is a way that you can donate to them, or if they have a Patreon or whatever, I would highly recommend that you do it. This sounds awesome. Plus, who wouldn't want to kill the Lich King in 3D, right? Fans of the roguelike game Hades can soon rejoice. Hades 2 technical test is set to begin shortly, with early access of the game scheduled for later this year. The Hades 2 technical test will be limited in scope, even compared to the early access version of the game, which is something that Supergiant Games have said, the developers of the game. A subset of players who request access will be invited to participate via an email from Steam with download instructions, which are some of the words that are coming out from the developers. The time frame for this test is set to be longer than a week, shorter than a month. So big shout out to PC Gamer for reminding me that I need to finish Hades 1 ASAP for this. It looks so cool. You know, Hades was such a really big and loved game. One of the best roguelikes that have actually like come out in recent years and stuff. Super good story, super good gameplay. Hades 2, if it just continues with that, I feel like we're going to be in for an absolutely phenomenal game. The technical test, just so that people understand, it's more just like it's before the early access, so it's just to make sure things are running all right. They'll be taking some of this, or pretty much all of this data, to make sure that the game is optimized as much as possible for early access, which is, again, a way for them to detect bugs, sort out optimizing, etc., before the full game actually gets released.
Early access is just a fancy word for paid for beta. So technical test is like a pre-alpha kind of vibe.
Yeah, I agree with you. But it's at least a way that you know that you've paid for the game. You've paid most likely going to be a lower price. Most EA titles do stay, you know, whatever you buy it at, you keep it at that. And when it does fully release, you are going to be paying the full price. So this is really cool. Hades is an amazing game. If you haven't played it, go check it out. The art style is really unique. The story is really good. It's been voice acted incredibly well. Gameplay, there's one or two weapons I'm not a big fan of, and that's probably just because I am bad. It's a definite skill issue. I'm excited for Hades too.
Yeah, I must admit, like, roguelikes in general, not really my vibe, but apparently the music in this game as well is also, like, unbelievable. So I love that there are a lot of, like, multifaceted things to the game. It's not just like, oh, we do really well in one thing and then everything else is just kind of eh. From what I've heard from a lot of different people, like, this is such a good game. So definitely recommend having a look if you haven't and if you're into roguelikes.
Oh yeah.
So on the conversation of AI, Sony has recently filed a patent for a new AI-powered system that could be used for auto-playing parts of games. This begs the question, what is the point? Sony files a number of patents all the time, so that's not to say this will actually become an actual feature in the future, but what a weird feature to even be contemplating. This AI-powered system would enable gamers to skip gameplay segments by employing an autoplay mode. According to the patent, this would use an AI to learn how to simulate gameplay style by taking information from cloud-based services such as the PSN, or the PlayStation Network. The patent comes with a few ideas for the implementation of this new tech, such as emulating the specific gameplay style of a gamer after learning from a few sections of repetitive gameplay. For example, another idea is related to anticipated grinding content. Giving the player the chance to turn on this option before these moments of perceived repetitive gameplay start. When playing, gamers would have the option to resume the autoplay mode at any instant or receive a notification after a certain grindy section has been completed. Think a la World of Warcraft rep grind, right? Same quests every single week. Over and over and over again. You put on autoplay mode and it does it for you. One of the main praise points has been that this would be a great way to skip grindy content. Have we not considered perhaps not making all of our games utter grind fest? I feel like we're trying to find the solution to a problem that we created. We don't need AI to solve this problem. We just need less grindy content. Do you know what I think, right? Here's my tinfoil hat, like, conspiracy theory. I think Sony want to produce a lot of grindy games, and they don't want anyone else coming up with the idea to get around it. So they're patenting it now to bury it. Imagine what else this thing could learn to do. And what is the point of gaming if you don't actually want to play the game? Go watch a movie instead or watch someone stream it. Like, this is just a dumb idea.
I'm on the fence on this, right? You're talking about grindiness. I mean, you've played a lot of World of Warcraft, as have I. And rep grinding is painful. Right, you know, the I don't know if you've ever done in vanilla the Blood Cell Corsair or the Blood Cell Buccaneer, sorry, their rep. It's just a whole bunch of killing things constantly, and that takes such a long time, even at higher level, because at that stage you're actually more worried about respawn time than anything else. So I tend to agree with you that we're creating a solution for a problem that we created. Don't make the games as grindy. Like, it's perfect to have a grind so that people feel a sense of accomplishment. But if you're just going to have AI do it for you, then, like, it doesn't make sense. Where I do see a big benefit for this is, you know, making gaming more accessible to people that maybe can't play games. Maybe they're more visually impaired or physically impaired. So something like this is a great way in order for people to get exposed to games. And maybe there's just some sections in games that are just really, really hard. Maybe some people's reactions are just not as good anymore for whatever the case may be. And having something like this to actually just get past those points is such a great thing. I mean, I still feel like, you know, people are going to feel a sense of accomplishment whether they use this kind of feature or not. So, as you said, Sony file a lot of things all the time. So whether or not this is actually going to be something in the future, I mean, who knows?
I think there are better ways to make games accessible, right? Like, you get special controllers that are made for people with, you know, certain different abilities and so on, right? So you make accessible in other ways. Finding an AI that's going to play the game for you. Hold on, guys. I'm going to load up into Valorant. I'm going to get the AI to play the game for me. I'm going to feel super accomplished when I hit that ascendant rank with my AI. Like, okay, that's an extreme example, and competitive games would likely ban out something like that. But you get where I'm going with this. Like, there is no sense of accomplishment if you haven't done it. I mean, it could be something like, yeah, guys, I beat Elden Ring in like 2 hours. I used an AI, but who cares? That's my accomplishment. No, it's not an accomplishment. It's a crutch. It's not you doing it. I do hear what you're saying about people who have specific disabilities, but for just your average gamer that's like, nah, this is too hard. I'm not a fan. I'm just not a fan, yeah. Bro.
Sam is one of those people that will say that if she's one of those that will type "get good" in chat.
Bro, or... I am bronze in Valorant, okay? That is the second lowest rank in the game. If anybody needs an AI to play the game for them, it's me. And I'm saying no, because I would rather be good on my own two feet than pretend to be good with some other nonsense. So.
Yeah, I hear you. I hope this doesn't necessarily become a thing, because I feel like it is something that could potentially hamper the industry, but also I see the good upsides for it. But whether it becomes something is going to be a really long time, I think.
Yeah.
So the new segment that we have, it's not so much a penguin's promising playable or Sam's soon to be success. It is a penguin's pixelated ponderings. Right. I did a lot of thinking today. All right. The year is 2024. And we have AI in everything. This is including mice. And I'm looking at you, Logitech. AI, mice, clicking things. Crazy. But anyways. All things games are readily available and at our fingertips. We have evolved in so many ways to this day in gaming. So then explain to me. Why does it feel that we have devolved into developing online-only games? Now, I am not targeting those that force you to log in via their own client. That's another rant for another day, because having, you know, a game is like, no, you got to use our client. And another game, no, we've got our own client. But why do I have to log into your game to play a game that is either single player or is like just majority in single player? Things like Diablo 4, The Crew, Payday 3, it just makes no sense. If anything, I feel you're limiting your audience more, especially in developing countries. There are still massive areas in the world where gaming is not 100% accessible, and that sucks, true. So why do we do this? Is it stats? Do you want to learn things from people's gameplay? I bought your game. You don't have to know what I like or dislike about it. If there are things that we like, we will tell you. If there are things we do not like, us gamers are very skilled and talented in letting developers know what we do not like in games, right? So developers, please, for the love of all things good, please can we try move away from this online-only games? Please.
I found a survey that was done about the sustainability of live service games, and it was pretty like cool that... coincidentally, this thing came out literally like 5 hours ago as at the time of recording. But because we've spoken a lot about the online only aspect of it, and I feel like live service definitely ties into that a lot, right? Like, so your live service is games that have constant updates, have seasons, battle passes, stuff like that, that are designed to like keep people coming back, keep people playing more. So it definitely does kind of tie in hand a little bit. Like you mentioned Diablo 4. But it couldn't be live service if it was offline. So they do tie in quite a bit. And most devs at the moment actually are not super hyped about the idea of continuing with live service games. They're saying, so there were a few options. It was about the level of concern about the live service game model, right? So there was very concerned, somewhat concerned, not concerned at all. 70% of those interviewed said that they were concerned, with the split being 39% somewhat concerned, 31% being very concerned, and only 25% were like not concerned at all. There was like a small percentage that were just like, I don't know. Yeah, haven't really thought about it. But the vast majority of the current gaming industry is worried about the sustainability of these live service models. And the main reason about their concerns, so 63%, the concern came from players just losing interest. Because let's face it, these live service models, it's just the same thing over and over and over again. Here, have some coins. Here, have a reskin of a reskin. They don't really add terribly much to the game. Here, have 20 minutes of extra gameplay that you didn't really need, but we'll give it to you anyway because you paid for the game and we have to do this thing. 62% are actually worried about competition from other live service games, because here's the thing. A live service game is something that you are playing consistently, continuously, all the time if you want all the things. Think about your favorite game with a battle pass. How many hours do you have to put in order to unlock? I have never finished a Valorant battle pass or an Overwatch battle pass. Never. Because I just don't have the time. So if I'm trying to grind out battle passes for like 3 or 4 different games, eventually you have to choose. So a lot of people are worried about competition. And then, you know, rising costs for user acquisition was a big one, around 47%. And then the rising cost of development. Now, that was actually a lower concern, which kind of impressed me. It was like 34%. And for devs to just be like, yeah, no, money's not our big worry. As in terms of like developing these things, because they know that like the majority of their profits are going to come if people play it. But if people stop playing it, then the profits get cut. So I'm very happy to see that it looks like we may be heading into a world where we move away from this. But as it stands right now, I think too many businesses are just raking in way too much cash to stop right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, it comes down to the money, right? At the moment, this is, you know, something that works. It is just the formula that is currently ticking off all the boxes. People are making money. But the thing is, though, at some stage, you know, people want to be able to access different markets. They want to be able to find additional sources of revenue. Why not just sell a published and complete game? And have a DLC, you know, do something like Elden Ring has done, where the base game came out absolutely amazing. People were still playing it, you know, well after its release, and people have finished it, you know, doing a second, a third, or a fourth playthrough. Now with their DLC that's coming out, you know, people are picking up the game either for the first time with the DLC, or people are getting the DLC. That feels fine. To go into season 73 of a game for the battle pass, you know, and you could pay for tier up on the battle pass, which is ultimately, it kind of feels predatory in a way. And some people do fall prey to it. And like people, you know, like people that work, who study, you know, who only have a little bit of time and like really enjoy the games, to do those battle passes or the season passes or the other one, like Magic the Gathering, I think they call their thing a mastery pass, like Magic the Gathering Arena. It's just people are going to be preying on those that actually do work and everything and are just going to pay for those level ups. So it kind of just feels like, why don't you just create something new or something complete and completely get a focus on that? Because it just, I don't like the online only. And I think it's also coming from, you know, being a South African, where things like internet can sometimes be a big issue, or even just having power can be an issue. So games on my laptop, like if I wanted to play Diablo 4, like why do I have to log in to play a game, which in actual fact, the whole story I could do on my own, even all the other tier things you can do on your own. How do I know this? Because I literally do them on my own. It's not difficult. Right. Or I mean, it can be challenging with some things, but like you can do the stuff on your own. It just when you lock a game, which is majority single player, for example, like The Crew, and make it online only, and then like, the game's not doing so well, we're going to be shutting off our service, and people have paid it, and then you like yoink it out of their library, that's bullshit.
Mm.
It really and truly is.
I can't really think of another situation, and maybe I just haven't given it enough thought, but I can't really think of another situation where you pay for something and then you can no longer access it later. And I'm talking like, so I know, for example, you could buy movies on streaming services and stuff, and then they'd be like, oh, we don't offer this movie anymore. And it's like, oh, okay, well, I mean, I watched the movie. But that's different because that's a similar area. I'm talking like kind of out of the internet, real world examples of where like you pay money for something and somebody just rocks up and says, actually, you don't have access to this anymore. Sucks to be you, despite the fact that you've paid the money for it. I suppose the best way I could think of it is like if you buy like a season pass to an amusement park and then the amusement park shuts down and then you're like, okay, well, what now? And they're like, oh, well, you
I had it for 2 months. I've paid for like a year, 2 years. I paid for a lifetime, and now all of a sudden I don't have access to it because it wasn't making you enough money. It's a difficult situation because I do see both sides of the coin. It just, I feel more strongly on the other gamer side where it leaves a super sour taste in your mouth for things like this.
Well, this thing, because if you just left it as an offline, so if it was always an offline game and you just left it in your store forever, you're just like, we're not going to do updates, we're not going to fix bugs, we're not going to, like, we don't care about this game anymore, you can buy it, you can play it, we don't give a damn, then that's fine, then cool, then the people who spent the money on it, happy days. But the fact that it can only be used in a specific way and you've now taken that way away from people, kind of scummy.
So yeah, game developers, just a cry out from us, just can we try and find a different solution to this? Do not force us into this. We'll talk about you wanting to have your own launches another day. But for now, let's just sort this problem out. And then we'll tackle the 12 different freaking launches I need to have on my PC to play your games.
All right, we spent a lot of time on our new segments, and it's cool. There's a lot of great discussion, but that means that we're going to have to try and get through our special mentions relatively quickly. So first and foremost, Pal World by Pocket Pair continues to receive frequent updates to enhance gameplay and fix bugs, keeping players engaged and satisfied. However, Tencent's new co-op sandbox title, Auroria, poses as a potential competitor to Pal World, creating buzz among fans and industry professionals. With a budget of 10 billion yen, or approximately 1.2 billion rand, Tencent's development of a Pal World clone could introduce new levels of competition in the survival gaming space. And I'll be honest, if I were, like, the Pocket Pair devs actually tweeted about this themselves, like, oh, this is so cool. Bruh, if it was me, I'd be shaking. Tencent is your competition? Good luck.
GTA Plus subscription service is quietly increased in price, leaving already critical fans even more dissatisfied with Rockstar Games. The $2 a monthly increase for GTA Plus on next-gen consoles goes into effect from June 11th, 2024, with no official explanation from Rockstar. Despite backlash, Rockstar has added value to GTA Plus by including older games like GTA The Trilogy or Red Dead Redemption.
Stellar Blade developers ask fans to go easy on the demo, with after confirming some players have put dozens of hours into it. The demo for Shift Up's new action RPG has surpassed Final Fantasy VII Rebirth's demo in peak player numbers, which is a huge achievement in and of itself, showing impressive early success. With plans for post-launch updates like New Game Plus mode, Stellar Blade's developers seem to be confident in the game's potential success. I'm really sad because it's a PS5 exclusive and I really wanted to play it.
Hopefully there's another Black Friday special for a good PS5 and you can pick yourself up one. Spyro Reignited Trilogy may be added to Game Pass soon off a successful deal between Microsoft and Activision Blizzard. The compilation includes remakes of classic Spyro games originally released for PlayStation, offering new opportunities on Xbox and PC.
Fans can expect a new game reveal from Warhorse Studios on April 18, which an insider believes could be the highly anticipated Kingdom Come Deliverance 2. Now, as at the time of recording, this was the day before. So as at time of release, you guys might know what this announcement is. Maybe it is Kingdom Come, maybe it isn't. But for now, in our little bubble world, we're going to be excited for a potential sequel.
Deceit 2, a free-to-play horror game, offers social deduction gameplay similar to Among Us, with a horror twist that is coming to Xbox Game Pass. With full crossplay support and premium DLC available, this sequel offers improved gameplay for fans of social deduction games.
It's terrifying. Do you not like horror games? Don't play that. Sunnyside, a new Stardew Valley-esque game, lets players create characters, farm, and build relationships in a Japanese countryside setting. Very like anime graphics. Very cool. A demo is available on Steam with the full PC release on May 24th, followed by a console release on July 10th. I have downloaded the demo and I will be playing it later this weekend.
Stardew Valley's 1.6.4 update is just around the corner, promising bug fixes and even more new content for players. It's crazy. So much content for Stardew Valley.
I think with all of these new farming sims coming out, Concerned Ape was getting a little bit concerned. But without any reason to, I mean, Stardew, such a unbelievably popular game. I don't think that's ever going to die. EA's upcoming Black Panther game may be open world based on a new job listing. Details on EA's Black Panther game are scarce, with little information released and the studio developing it being unproven. So a little bit of a concern around that new game, but we look forward to more info.
Palworld's major update this summer won't include the PvP arena as previously announced, but it will bring new content like pals and islands. Fans can look forward to exploring a new island, encountering new pals, and experiencing other new features in the summer 2024 Palworld update.
Metaphor: ReFantazio is an upcoming high fantasy IP from Atlus, featuring social simulation and dungeon crawling elements similar to Persona. Originally set for spring or autumn 2024, so like now, the game's release was pushed back to fall 2024 or spring, but it may stick to its new window without further delays. The game's potential release date leaked by Midori is October 12th, but fans should await official confirmation from Atlus or Sega.
Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast are planning a sequel to Baldur's Gate 3, despite Larian Studios stepping back from the series. The decision is not to rush into Baldur's Gate 4 is being made cautiously by Hasbro, aiming for the right partner and product for the future. And I can safely say that that is a very good decision.
It's a good decision, but I'd be very curious to see who they partner with, because it could be fantastic and it could be a disaster. One Piece Odyssey is coming to the Nintendo Switch on July 26th, along with previously released DLC and brand new content. The RPG features Monkey D. Luffy and the Straw Hat Pirates in an adventure featuring an original story and turn-based combat. The Switch version will come bundled with the Reunion of Memories DLC and unique City of Water outfits for players to unlock. Now, speaking of the Nintendo Switch, mentioned it last week, we love indie games here. So there was another showcase, the Nintendo Indie World Showcase, which showcased games, indie games that will be coming to Switch. However, many of these will have or already have a PC release through Steam. So this is just kind of an announcement of what's coming to Nintendo. Now, some of them are like brand new, some of them already exist, but pretty big news overall. And one of the games that's coming to both very soon is Little Kitty Big City, which is Stray, but it's cartoony and less depressing. It looks very, very cute and will release on the 9th of May.
Refined Self, the personality test game, which is basically gamified MBTI, Myers-Briggs test, effectively. It's an exploration-based adventure game with choices presented to the player, which is then extrapolated and used to estimate your personality type.
Sounds way more fun than like ticking boxes, I'll be honest.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Sticky Business. This is one that kind of came out on PC a little while ago, but is now coming to Nintendo. Run your own cozy small business. Create stickers, pack orders, and hear your customers' stories. There are tons of customization options. The only downside being you can't download the designs to print physical copies. Yes, they are that cute.
Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, a non-linear mystery around an old hotel somewhere in Central Europe, filled with an immense number of handcrafted puzzles and riddles, each leading you closer to discovering the enigma of Lorelei is coming out. It's so cool. It looks so cool.
It does, yeah. Europa. On the moon Europa, a lush terraformed paradise in Jupiter's shadow, an android named Z sets out in search of answers. Run, glide, and fly across the landscape, solve mysteries in the ruins of a fallen utopia, and discover the story of the last human alive. And a lot of the gameplay feels very kind of Breath of the Wild. I didn't see if there was a lot of combat involved, but like the world itself is beautiful. The exploration looks really cool. So check it out.
Yeah, so big shout out to our indie developers. You make us here very happy, and I'm sure you make a lot of other gamers out there incredibly, incredibly happy. All right, and in this week's news, nobody cares about. If you're ever thinking about modifying your save game data to benefit yourself and you live in Japan, think again. Japan has recently arrested a 36-year-old man for having software to illegally modify save data for Pokemon Violet in order to change a Pokemon's bit, and is selling these saves. Right? It's crazy. The man is allegedly selling and taking custom orders for rare Pokemon and the moves that they want, selling this $50 and $84 a save. Right? This is American dollars. He has reportedly admitted to committing to these crimes, justifying he did it to earn a living. He now faces imprisonment up to 5 years and or a fine of up to 5 million yen. That's around $32,600. This is not the first time something like this has happened, but it always comes down to this. Crime doesn't pay, even if it is modifying Pokemon saves.
So that's a bit of a crazy one. I kind of get it, because like you're exploiting a game and game exploits are problematic. I don't know if I necessarily agree with jail time. The fine makes a lot of sense, but prison? Yeah, to be honest, don't mess with Japan. Just don't do it. Yeah, it's not worth it.
Japan is one of those countries that actually has like pretty serious like cyber laws, and this act here actually falls directly within it, and that is why he has got imprisonment or prison time up to 5 years, or as well and or a fine. Right, so this is still something that is ongoing. It hasn't obviously been finalized as of yet, but man, this is crazy. When I read it, I was like, you know, modifying your saves. I remember back in the days, I used to, you know, like used to have those cheat engines and things like that. So you used to modify numbers and things like that. That's a criminal offense in Japan. So if you're thinking about doing things like that, don't cheat.
It's not worth it.
Unless it's a single player game and it's on your own PC and you don't have to be online for it at all.
Or you live in a non-extradition country.
All that. Then to your heart's content, go and, play and use cheats in a single player.
Your weekend gaming podcast does not endorse cheating. This is purely for entertainment purposes.
If it's in a single player game like Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, do whatever the hell you want, right? Do not do it in competitive or when you're going to be compromising other people's gameplay. If it's for yourself, offline, single player, you know what? Do whatever you want to. Break the game if you have to. But yeah, don't do this in Japan. This is our little announcement from us to you. Just don't.
Public service announcement.
This is a PSA from your week in gaming. Well, that about rounds up our news in gaming this week. Thank you so much for tuning in to episode 59 of your week in gaming. You can find us on socials at YWIG Podcast and by email at yourweekingamingpodcast@gmail.com. I'm Andrew, and you can find me at My Name is Pengu.
I'm Sam. You can find me at Nari Mizuki.
Our next episode will be out on Friday, the 26th of April, 2024 at 7 a.m. GMT plus 2 and across all major podcast platforms. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.